Did you know that the 4th of July is on a Thursday this year? That's going to be a full weekend of fun out on the deck, 4 days. But if your deck isn't what it used to be and you aren't using it for great family gatherings, you need to call my friends at All Weather Decks. All Weather Decks is a 24-time winner of the Angie Super Service Award. And they probably help one of your neighbors. Click on the map link at allweatherdecks.net. Call All Weather Decks today at 913-206-1974 or go to allweatherdecks.net and mention you heard it on 810. Call now and relax.
He used to cover sporting. He used to cover the Chiefs. Now he covers everything. Okay, we get it. He's the columnist for the Kansas City Star, Sam McDowell, only on the program.
Welcome back. You're in the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB as we are on the road at the wonderful Jay Rieger Distillery, one of my favorite places to go. All kinds of great spots. It's really like, I don't know, four locations in one. Whether it's the tasting room, a great casual atmosphere, you can grab a snack while you try all the signature cocktails and spirits. The Hey Hey Club, one of the premier reservations in Kansas City, an intimate underground lounge that boasts the best cocktails and great atmosphere. It's like being transformed into like the 1920s. It is a great, great experience. Grab you a great meal, unbelievable cocktails as well. The Monogram Lounge, open space, the original floors, tons of windows, overlooks the distillery. It's great for groups if you're going to do a wedding reception or going to have a big company party or something. This is a fantastic place to have it. And of course, the Electric Park Garden Bar, the outside venue, Kansas City's most unique spot, over 7,500 square feet of fire pits, green spaces, a pergola, even a swing set chair. Delicious, wonderful street food from their food truck. You can get it all right here. And of course, the star of the show, the wonderful Jay Rieger cocktails. It is absolutely wonderful. The distillery, fully functioning distillery. Great night. Take the tour. You can book a tour at jrieger.co.com. That's JRIEGERCO.com if you're spelling challenged like I am, and you can come on down and enjoy the Super Bowl. That's right. Great spot to come watch the game on Sunday. Enjoy a Red Kingdom vodka cocktail, one of their great products. It's the perfect place to watch the game. This Sunday, it's at the Jay Rieger Distillery. Let's talk to our man, Sam McDowell. He's brought to you by the University of Kansas Health System, of course, the official health care provider of the Chiefs. He's in AZ. Sam, how are you, sir?
Well, not quite happy with that intro, Seren, that the week I'm in Arizona, not with you, you're at Jay Rieger.
Yeah.
Usually you've got your studio, and now you're out and about, and I can't be there.
It's by design. We're like, what's the day what's the location we could be at that would upset Sam the most, and let's make sure we book it for the day he can't be there. And so, yeah. Sorry, Sam.
It works.
Yeah, more for me. Yeah. More eats, more treats, more cocktails for me, less for you. That's how it works. So, listen, how is the atmosphere now, less than a week out in Phoenix? Let's start with that. I know the Phoenix Waste Management Open is going to be Thursday through Sunday. That's a giant event. That's the biggest event they have when they don't have the Super Bowl or maybe a Final Four there. That's going on at the end of the week, which has had everybody – Kansas City scrambling to find places to stay and, you know, flights and everything to get there. Is the Super Bowl, are the Chiefs getting their just due?
Yeah, what's interesting about it is, well, first of all, at the airport, there's signage as soon as you're there. But that signage was there when we were here for the season opener. There's a clock with a countdown. And I recalled coming down the escalator at Sky Harbor and taking a picture of it and saying, hey, season starts here. I wonder if it's going to end here. And took a picture of that same sign. And that countdown, of course, was at 7 days when we arrived here yesterday. I was actually surprised by the amount of Chiefs fans that are already in town. You know, usually when we travel to Chiefs games, you travel kind of alongside a bunch of Chiefs fans because you're traveling the same day as they are. You go in Saturday, you come back Monday. That's when a lot of Chiefs fans make their trip to games. I expected that this was going to be, you know, a lot different because Chiefs fans were going to be waiting to come to the game. There's quite a bit of Chiefs fans already here that were on the flight. I saw quite a few in Arizona. So I think a lot of people are making the week of it. Or maybe they want to head over to Surprise and see where the Royals are going to be practicing this week. I don't know.
Right. The Chiefs fans take over. And I think we're finding the phenomenon that we see with Packer and Steeler fans. They're everywhere. Like, people who grow up in towns where the team sucks and has sucked look for good teams. The Chiefs are that team. So now there's, like, fans of the Chiefs that are like Eric Eager-like fans, right? They never lived in Kansas City, but they grabbed on to what is the most exciting player, the most exciting team at a time that they were looking for something to root for.
Did you just call Eric a bandwagon fan? I just want to make sure we label it correctly.
No, because he jumped on board in 2010.
That is always the cutoff string. If you survive 2012, then you deserve everything that comes after.
Yes. Yes. That was a playoff year, but then he hung with them through some down years and stayed the course. So yes, we do give him credit for being a fan, of being a true fan, because he's weathered tough times. But there are a lot of Chiefs fans that are not Kansas Cityans that are, you know, becoming part of, the everything you see when you go out on the road. Not everybody was on a flight or drove from Kansas City.
Yeah, and I think also to that point, you see, you know, Patrick Mahomes. I mean, the Chiefs as a whole, but I think Patrick Mahomes in particular has put Kansas City in a different place nationally and even globally. I mean, I think people recognize just the city we all live in because of this football team. It has that kind of impact when 100 million people are watching your game live in the Super Bowl. And this is the third time in 4 years these guys have played this game. I think it prompts people to figure out, just want to learn more about the city itself. So it's just the kind of impact this team has had on the entire city, not just the fan base.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt. One of the things you wrote about, the officials, it was in your piece yesterday, the Carl Cheffers is creating nightmares for Chiefs fans. How much should they be terrified?
Well, I think it's both fan bases should be a little bit concerned, because to me, the Carl Cheffers story, he has not reffed good games the last three times he's been with the Chiefs, which is, you know, the 2020 Super Bowl, the Raiders game this year, the Texans games this year. But when you dig into the numbers, he's led the league in penalties the last 2 years. He was second the year before. And before that, he had a run of like being sixth in the league, eighth in the league. And of course, there's not 32 officiating crews, right? You only need half that amount. So he used to rank just above middle of the pack. And now, you know, second, first. As I phrase it in my column, it's like we're going to see Mark McGwire participating in the home run derby in his prime here by watching him in the Super Bowl. To me, the league is sending a message that their highest graded officials, and there's a misconception about how these guys are selected, because I think a lot of people think it's just the highest graded official. It actually just has to be referees who are ranked within tier one of five. And so there could be multiple guys. They're pretty secretive about that. In fact, some officials don't exactly know how they're selected within that tier, which of the guys is going to be selected. Cheffers is the second Super Bowl in the last 3 years, and only – he's the only guy in the last 30 years to do that, because you can't do it back-to-back year. It's the best you can do. That's what he's doing. I just think the league is sending a message to the rest of its officials is, hey, the guy who's getting the Super Bowl 2 out of 3 years is leading the league in flags. It sort of indicates that, well, it really indicates that they want you to err on the side of throwing a flag rather than erring on the side of missing a call. And so that's my concern with having Carl Cheffers officiate the game, is that I think it's likely we're going to be dealing with more penalties in this game. That's not the game I want to see.
I agree. It's not the one that I want to see, and I don't think it's the one that anybody wants. And it generally helps the underdog. Right. That's one of the big notes that everybody has on Cheffers, is how the underdog covers so much when he's there. I think I heard this. I haven't looked it up. You may have. And maybe I read it from you. The Chiefs are 12-4 when he reps the game, but they're 12-4 when anybody does it. And the Chiefs are kind of a unique. You're not usually the underdog with the better quarterback, right? Usually Eagles would be the underdog. So I don't know that those previous numbers really apply here, do they?
Yeah, I agree with the underdog part of it. You know, the under hits a lot when he referees games. The Chiefs are 8-2 in the Patrick Mahomes era with Carl Cheffers, which is, of course, an 800 win percentage. Patrick Mahomes' career record is 64-16, which is also an 800 win percentage. So I don't think it's as much about him favoring one team or another. I'm guessing there's other fan bases that look at him refereeing a game the same way the Kansas City fan base looks at it. But, you know, of course, it's not his entire crew. Now, I think it's his side judge, Eugene Kemp, is also part of, or Eugene Hall is also part of this crew for the Super Bowl. That's the only guy who comes from Carl Sheffer's crew. But he does lead the way. And when you go back at that Houston game in particular, Strain, if you remember the Juju Smith-Schuster fumble that was initially not called a fumble in Houston, they reviewed it and decided that before forward progress was stopped, there was a fumble, which was a new rule instituted this year. If the point of contact causes the fumble, you can review forward progress. Before they reviewed that, and I timed it out for this column, it was a 150-second delay. That's longer than a commercial break between the end of a play and before he came on the mic and said, this play is going to be challenged. There were two other plays in that game where the referees threw a flag, they huddled up for a bit, and then they announced there's no flag. That was the extent of the explanation that we as fans, we as media received was, oh, by the way, whatever you just saw, that didn't happen. So I think the game, and this is the reason I said that there's a concern about the game with the referee, is I think it's more about the pace and the lack of clarity in the game than it is, you know, him favoring one team or another.
I hear what you're saying there, but it's not that he intentionally tries to maybe harm one team, but it's going to affect one team more than the other, and I would think it's the one that's throwing the ball. I mean, that to me is more of the rhythm passing game, and that's why the underdog, which generally is the team with the lesser quarterback, benefits from him, because he's knocking the team that has the high power, has, you know, the weapons and wants to get going and play the game. He takes them out of their rhythm, right? Like that's my theory on it.
Well, I do think that's why the under often hits whenever he's the referee, is for that exact reason. I do think it's more likely to take the rhythm out of the offense, and it would be different if, you know, his crew called a lot more false starts, for example, because I think those are more objective calls. They're pretty cut and dry. It's the holdings, the penalties, the roughing the passers, those sorts of things that are just more subjective calls. And yeah, I think even sometimes when that favors the offense, if it's 50-50 split, let's say holdings, defensive, offensive. Yeah, I think overall, while it may come out in the wash yardage wise, it absolutely breaks up the rhythm that an offense can try and build.
Yeah, I just, you know, I hope that, and it's not just his crew, right? He's the white hat, but it's like an all-star crew, correct?
Yeah, he's got one guy from his crew that's there that'll be here in Arizona, but otherwise, yeah, it's just him. But that's why, you know, even in what I wrote, I really pointed out the fact that the parts of the game that he does lead, which I think is the pace of the game, the clarity of the game that the viewers receive as far as what's going on and why calls are made, those have been problematic for him. And I don't think just because his crew changes that those are going to improve. In fact, you could argue because there's less familiarity with the guys he's working with, that stuff could even take a step back.
I don't get it. The entire NFL referee thing, I just don't get. I don't get how they seem to own this league. It's staggering to me how this all works. We'll talk more about the game. Sam McDowell's with us. He's in Arizona. He's brought to you by the University of Kansas Health System. If you have a strain, a sprain, a fracture, you need to see somebody quickly. You don't even have to have an appointment. You can walk right in and be seen by an expert right there at 435 and all. Open 8 a.m. to 7 p.m. Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. on Saturday. You can learn more at kansashealthsystem.com/sportsmedicine. We're broadcasting live today at the J. Rieger Distillery. Perfect place. There's no cooler or stylish.
Really appreciate it. Really,
yeah,
appreciate
a place it, to hang out than right here. It beats the hell out of some cheesy Airbnb in Phoenix. I'll tell you that for sure. No doubt about it. Great food, incredible cocktails, great environment. It's all right here. You can learn more by going to J. Rieger Company or jriegerco.com. That's jriegerco.com. Rieger is R-I-E-G-E-R. G-E-R. We'll take a break. More with Sam McDowell next here in the program.
Hey, everybody. Joe Spiker, owner of Easton Roofing here. For almost 10 years, we've been a locally owned and operated family business. At Easton, we work on every job with one thing in mind. Integrity matters. I grew up in Central Kansas, was raised on the values of respecting hard work. At Easton, we always make decisions based on the ethical, right thing for the customer. That's what integrity means to us. So if you have any questions about your roof, give me and my team a call. 913-257-5426. Easton Roofing. Integrity matters.
Sir, who was the first player to have two rushing touchdowns in a single Super Bowl for the losing team? It was Eddie George of the Titans against the Rams back in Super Bowl 34. They were 13-0 before that. They're 1-0 since that. James White of the Patriots against the Falcons back in Super Bowl 51.
Wow, how about that? 14-1 overall. So I guess the key there is either have a guy rush for two rushing touchdowns, and sure as hell don't let anybody rush for two rushing touchdowns against you. 14-1. Pretty good stats playing for Good Sense, GoodSenseSubs.com. That is where you can order online. Great spot. If you're sitting at home, going to be watching the game, get those party trays, GoodSenseSubs.com. You can put your order in right now, pick it up, or have it delivered. They're absolutely fantastic. Comes with all the veggies, all the fixings, all the trimmings that go on that wonderful sub with the pillowy soft bread, the fresh meat and cheese. We always get a couple of them for my house. It's a great time at Good Sense, plus all the condiments, everything. They do a phenomenal job. Order today at GoodSenseSubs.com. We're broadcasting live here at the J. Rieger Distillery, J. Rieger & Company, Kansas City's original distillery. You can stock up this week on Red Kingdom Vodka for the big game. Red Kingdom Vodka is the official vodka of the Chiefs. J. Rieger & Company also hosting the official Chiefs watch party on Sunday. Food, drink specials, the Rumble and Casey Wolf are going to be on site to get the party started. J. Rieger & Company merch and products will be raffled off during each quarter so you can win some great prizes. The watch party begins at 4, and we'll have a $15 cover, which gets you a welcome cocktail token, good for any J. Rieger & Company cocktail. They are fantastic. The event is first come, first served, so seating is not guaranteed, so get there early. They're also raffling off J. Rieger merch as well this week, plus Chiefs gear all at happy hour Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday from 3 to 6. So if you're looking for a great happy hour Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday from 3 to 6, come on down. It is a great spot. The happy hour menu at J. Rieger offers amazing food and drink specials, plus the best cocktail deals in town. It's all here at the J. Rieger Distillery. Great spot to come with family and friends. We're talking to Sam McDowell here in the program. Sam, tell me, do you expect the Chiefs to come out and try to pound the rock because of the pass rush of the Philadelphia Eagles?
I don't, actually. I just don't think it's really in Andy Reid's DNA to give up what he thinks is best. I think he thinks other teams should have to adjust what he's doing. That's not to say he doesn't put in game plan specific stuff for teams. We saw him put in a game plan specific thing for the Bengals. A lot of that was based on his quarterback's limited mobility. So I think it's more likely when we see a team have a pass rush, you know, let's look back to San Francisco, for example. He likes to work the edges to use that pass rush against them when teams like to get vertical quickly. He also likes to throw quick passes. So I think it's more likely to see something like that, some of those jet sweeps. That's dependent upon Kadarius Toney being healthy. I think more short passes like we saw against the Bengals a week ago.
Yeah, and I think that is – he's going to have to get them off balance, right? Whether it's screens, whether it's cut blocks on slants. I mean, those – edge defenders can't just tee off, and the front four as a whole cannot just tee off and come at Patrick Mahomes. I don't think he's, you know, I can't see a 35 carry night day for Andy Reid unless they're, you know, kickoff returns and pick sixes, and they're sitting on a giant lead and they're trying to burn the clock from the start of the fourth quarter on. Because they're going to do what Andy Reid likes to do, but he does have to. And he's very good at it, right? I'm not saying this is like Mount Everest that he's got to scale. He's got to keep them off balance. He's got to keep them guessing because just lining up one-on-one on the edge with the Chiefs tackles is advantage Eagles.
I think that's why, you know, it's exactly why I pointed at the San Francisco game is because I think going back and you look over the 19 game plans that Andy Reid's had this year, his best one that still stands out is what they did against the 49ers. I think the 49ers is probably, outside of this team that they're getting ready to face, the best pass rush that they've seen so far. And so there's evidence there that the Chiefs can beat this. In fact, I bet you the Eagles have spent a lot of time looking at what the Chiefs did against the 49ers during their own game planning this week.
Yeah. How much does Mecole Hardman hit the IR today? That's official. We felt like he was probably going to be out. They kept putting him as doubtful. But how big of a blow is that?
I think against this team, it is a blow, because I think Mecole Hardman runs those jet sweeps better than anybody they have on their roster. As small a guy as he is, he's been pretty fearless about cutting it upfield just to get, you know, when he sees the first seam he sees. I think that Tony is a very talented player on those same sort of plays. I just think Mecole Hardman, his experience within this offense gives him a better feel for what the Chiefs are trying to accomplish on those sort of sets. I think if Tony is limited, or if he can't play, that Sky Moore has struggled a little bit with those same sort of calls. So, yeah, I think Mecole Hardman, I don't think it's just because they've been playing without him for a while doesn't mean they couldn't have used him for this week.
Yeah, no doubt. You know, it's he. I was watching the Eagles game again last night from last year, and, you know, he had some nice plays in that. And you're like, ooh, damn. Like, you're missing those things, right? You've, like, people complain because he, you know, he's not, what's his name from Seattle, who went after him.
Yeah, DK Metcalf, yeah.
Yeah, but DK Metcalf, thank you. But he's been a productive player. He does his thing. It's not the same thing as DK Metcalf, but they're missing it. Now the question is, can Kadarius Toney give them all of that in his stead?
Yeah, and I think the biggest thing with Mecole Hardman that's sort of lost is people realize he's really fast, so they assume he's this guy that stretches the field vertically. He's got a skill set that doesn't overlap with a lot of their other receivers. When you look at Juju Smith-Schuster, Marquez Valdes-Scantling is also really fast. Him and Mecole Hardman use their speed a lot differently. Marquez is designed to take a defender away up top by stretching the field vertically. Mecole Hardman stretches it side to side. And that is, I think, more beneficial against a pass rush, is trying to keep those guys. You know, it's sort of the same thing, or the same objective with what the Eagles do in their offense when they try and do a lot of option stuff, even some RPO stuff. They try and have you make one step hesitancy before you exactly know where you're going to explode and go towards the football. That's what the Chiefs do when they try and stretch their field vertically. It's like, you got to think for a second whether or not you're going to shoot upfield at the quarterback, or is this guy going to whiz right by you on a jet sweep? That's the type of play they miss with Mecole Hardman.
Yeah, and it's you know, a nice weapon to have. There, you know, to be able to know that you've got that, and just to put the fear into the defense, because they've got good personnel, right? Like, are you a believer in the Eagles that they are all that their record says they are? Or do you think that they're a little bit bloated based upon playing a less than spectacular schedule?
Yeah, I think it's a combination of both, but I definitely believe the latter is part of this equation. You know, I think that the Eagles, I am a believer in the Eagles. I'm not a believer that the numbers are as, you know, that they're as good as their numbers suggest, because when you look at the schedule they played, I mean, look, you can only beat who you play. They did beat who they played, but Football Outsiders ranks their defensive schedule as the second easiest in the NFL. Like, their overall schedule is the easiest in the NFL. But just who their defenses has faced in terms of the quality of offenses alone, it's the second easiest in the NFL this year. You know, as much as the Chiefs are saying, wow, this team's got 70 sacks, that's 15 more than the second best team in the NFL, which, of course, was the Chiefs, I think the Eagles certainly have to be thinking, this offense is nothing like any of the offenses we've seen this year. Stern, when you look at their best teams that the Eagles have faced this year offensively, you know, you have to include teams like the Lions, the Jaguars, the Cowboys once, with Prescott. They got him once without Dak Prescott. You know, Aaron Rodgers, that offense, which hasn't been what it has been, of course, in years past, they put up 33 on him. A lot of these offenses that I'm naming, I don't think are what, you know, some of the listeners would say when you say, hey, rattle off what you think are the best, very, very best offense in the NFL. But those ones I just listed, they put up points when they faced the Eagles. So I think the Eagles certainly have something to prove that whatever they've been doing all year that's been working for them, that they can do it against the type of offense that the Chiefs have, because they haven't faced the type of offense that the Chiefs have.
How much better are the Eagles now than when the Chiefs faced them last year?
I've wondered that too. So that's really funny you asked that question, because I've sort of gone through my head just thinking about, you know, obviously offensively, A.J. Brown, I think, makes a difference because their offense, of course, is a run-first offense. They have the best running offense in the NFL. They actually, Football Outsiders said that they would rank the Eagles' offense number one in the league, even a rushing offense in the league, even without accounting for the rushes that Jalen Hurts gives them. And Jalen Hurts has 760 yards. I think there is a bit of a misconception thinking, yeah, well, they have the number one offense just because the quarterback runs. No, their rushing offense is very productive, even when they turn around and hand it to the running back. Now, certainly part of that is because you have the fear that Jalen Hurts is going to keep the ball on an RPO or something.
Yeah, because there aren't that – a lot of runs come with him being an option.
He's an option. So, yeah, so it's certainly part of the misdirection is part of it. I do think the reason A.J. Brown changes things is because he's a guy that can win one-on-one a lot. And so I think when you have the weakness of their offense, you would probably say is what? Jalen Hurts throwing the ball, right? Is he going to make a precision pass? They went out and got a couple of receivers in Smith and Brown. And obviously Smith was a rookie a year ago. I think being in year two is a lot different than being in year one. And then having A.J. Brown, they've got a couple of guys who you don't have to be perfect when you throw the ball to. And so when they do throw it, they're more effective. And I think a lot of the reason for that is just because of the receivers they have. So that's the biggest difference, I think, when I look at 21 versus 22. But Strand, I've asked myself that a lot, just looking at the way the Chiefs were able to move the ball against Philadelphia last year, offense versus defense.
Yeah, they went up and down. Now, Hassan Reddick does add a new dimension to them. But, you know, we've talked about the list of quarterbacks that they played. I think a lot, you know, I don't know that their pass rush is any better than the Chiefs, right? They haven't, the list of quarterbacks is staggering how bad they are. And, like, those are guys that hold the ball too long and, you know, the windows that are open to Patrick Mahomes aren't open to them. I'm not going to say this is a bad pass rush. It's not. But last year they had, I think it was 28 sacks. This year they had 70.
I think even if you debate whether or not it's better or worse than the Chiefs, there's an agreement that it's a lot different than the way the Chiefs go after the quarterback. You know, I think the Chiefs are built on what Chris Jones does. A lot of other guys getting one-on-one because of what Chris Jones does. The Eagles are more similar to what I think the Chiefs faced 3 years ago in the Super Bowl, the last time they won a Super Bowl, which is there's a lot of guys on that team that can win, you know, beat their guy up front just one-on-one. And I think it's the reason I point out the game 3 years ago, I think there's some things that a coach tries to do when you can anticipate where that pass rush might come from. I think it's a little bit more difficult with the Eagles because of their balance across the defensive line to know where that pressure might come from. And therefore, it's going to have to be a lot of reactionary stuff from a quarterback that is still just 3 weeks removed from a high ankle sprain.
Yeah, no doubt. And that is one of the things that we'll talk about, how healthy is Patrick Mahomes. It is the program, broadcasting live at Jay Rieger, one of my favorite spots in Kansas City, without a doubt, one of the coolest spots, in Kansas City. The, original, distillery is, right here in Kansas City. It is a great spot, 2700, Gwinnett. You know, I still am not entirely sure. Gwinotte. I've had different people tell me different things. But 2700 Gwinnett Ave in KC, Mo. You can check it out. All kinds of great spots, whether it's the Electric Park Garden, Garden Bar, the Monogram Lounge, the Hey Hey Club downstairs, the Tasting Room, all of them absolutely fantastic spots. It's like multiple venues all in one. Book a tour right now. Go to the website, jrieger.co.com. That's jrieger.co.com. Chiefs.com. And of course, make sure you're here for the big game on Sunday. Food and drink specials, the Rumble and Casey Wolf on site getting the party started. Jay Rieger and co. Merch and products are going to be raffled off during each quarter. That would be a great win. Watch party begins at 4. The cover is $15. Of course, you get a welcome cocktail token with that. Good for any Jay Rieger and co. Cocktail. The event is first come, first serve, so seating is not guaranteed. So get here early, and don't forget about the happy hour Wednesday, Thursday, Friday from 3 to 6. We take a break. More with Sam McDowell next here in the program.
Hey, everybody. Joe Spiker, owner of Easton Roofing here. For almost 10 years, we've been a locally owned and operated family business. At Easton, we work on every job with one thing in mind. Integrity matters. I grew up in Central Kansas, was raised on the values of respecting hard work. At Easton, we always make decisions based on the ethical, right thing for the customer. That's what integrity means to us. So if you have any questions about your roof, give me and my team a call. 913-257-5426. Easton Roofing. Integrity matters.
All right, welcome back here on the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB, broadcasting live at a spot that will be hopping come Sunday. Jay Rieger & Co., Kansas City's original distillery. You can stock up this week on Red Kingdom Vodka for the big game. Red Kingdom Vodka is the official vodka of the Chiefs, and Jay Rieger & Company are going to be hosting the official Chiefs watch party on Sunday. Food and drink specials, the Rumble, Casey Wolf, all going to be here, going to be giving out merch and product, all part of the raffle. $15 gets you in. It opens the doors at 4 o'clock. Seats aren't guaranteed, so first come, first serve. Take advantage of that. Your $15 cover gets you a welcome cocktail. You can come down and enjoy all the great, great atmosphere here at the Jay Rieger Distillery. Sam McDowell not getting a chance to enjoy it, but he is brought to you by the University of Kansas Health System, the official healthcare provider of Kansas Athletics, together with LMH Health. If you have an urgent orthopedic or sports injury, the University of Kansas Health System can see you quickly. Learn more at kansashealthsystem.com/sportsmedicine. Sam, what do you expect from Patrick Mahomes? Have you seen anything at practice that makes you think he's going to be significantly better, about the same? What's your anticipation for his mobility?
Well, the Chiefs design for us to see a practice what they want us to see a practice. So I think it's you know, I've seen a lot of particular reports that try and gauge exactly what he's doing, the way he's moving. I don't think there's much to make of what he's doing at practice. But, you know, I think if he was 3 weeks removed from a high ankle sprain, you'd feel like he's probably a week away from being close to 100%. But the guy played an NFL tackle football game within that period. So from people I've talked to, from medical people I've talked to, it's not that his timeline just completely resets when he goes to an NFL game, but it does move backwards. I know he said he came out of that game okay, that he just had the normal soreness. His whole body was sore because he felt like that was a pretty physical football game. Oddly, I think the one that put him in most danger was when the ball just flat out slipped out of his hands, and that's probably where he felt the worst on his ankle. But I think you're going to see a guy that feels more like he's 2 to 2.5 weeks removed from a high ankle sprain. And there's a lot of guys that don't even play in that situation. So I think it's going to be closer to something we saw in Cincinnati as far as just his mobility than it will be like the 100% healthy Patrick Mahomes we saw a lot in the regular season.
Do you buy that he... Yeah, this is, you know, maybe makes him a more disciplined quarterback and stays within the rhythm of the offense? Could this actually make him more dangerous just to be a pocket passer?
No, I don't buy that. But I buy the fact that, yes, it's going to have to make him a more disciplined quarterback. I don't think that's the most effective version of Patrick Mahomes, though. I think so much of what he does is we talked about, you know, the Eagles running game and the fear of who has the ball. I think there's a lot of fear in defense as far as just what can he do when the play breaks down. And that element, I think, is a major part of, you know, what the Chiefs are able to do. But he improved a lot this year as a pocket passer. And I think it took this injury for a lot of us to realize, wait a minute, let's go back and look at what this guy has done inside the pocket this year. And he was the number one in terms of expected points added, the number one pocket passer in the NFL this year. He ranked 9th in that category last year. It was his offseason focus based on what the Bengals did to him a year before to say, the Bengals want me to throw from the pocket all day. if other teams are going to do that because that's what worked against me in the AFC Championship, I got to learn to throw from the pocket. So I think he already made that giant leap this year. I think a lot of us just missed it because he was still doing the extracurricular stuff. Now that he can't do that sort of stuff, you look at it and fine-tooth comb the research of it, and it's like, well, wait a minute. This guy's been really good from the pocket this year, so that's why it's not quite the concern I think it would be if we're having this exact same conversation a year ago.
Yeah, I agree. He's become has always been good in the pocket, but I think he's embraced it. I think that was part of what, you know, when they traded Tyreek Hill, they told him, look, we're going to get you guys. You're not going to have any one guy that's as good as Tyreek Hill, but you'll have weapons, but you're going to have to stay within the structure of what's going on. And you're going to have to, certain guys will be certain days. You know, it's not just throw it up for grabs and hope Tyreek Hill comes down for it. And I think he embraced that, and he got better this entire season at allowing the offense to dictate where he would go with the football. And I do think that's made him better as a quarterback.
I totally agree. And I think it was forced upon him because of what he saw at the end of last year. But, you know, I think I thought about this because, you know, I'm going to the NFL honors on Thursday night. I anticipate that Patrick Mahomes will be named the MVP on Thursday night. I think we all do. And if you just go back and think about his career in a season by season basis, I don't think we've seen the wow plays as much from the whole Chiefs offense when you're missing number 10, but even Patrick Mahomes himself. But I just think he's been more consistent and effective with the things you just mentioned as far as staying within the structure of the offense. This was the thing we talked about. Well, I don't remember what weeks it was, Trent, but what like weeks 6 through 10 maybe last year were like, can he take the easy stuff? Does he have the discipline to just take what's there and just take the check downs? And, you know, I think it was second in the league. He was second in the league this year as far as how often he threw like within 5 yards of the line of scrimmage. The Chiefs were the most effective team in the NFL throwing behind the line of scrimmage this year. I think that's difficult mentality for Patrick Mahomes to change, because when you've got that kind of arm, you want to be throwing downfield all the time. So I think we have to credit a lot of the mental exercises he went through this offseason just to become a better quarterback.
Yeah, no doubt. What's at stake in your mind for Patrick Mahomes with a win? Like what does a win do for what he is now to the game, and what does a loss do?
I think the legacy part of the question is the Chiefs are now in this era where they're trying to win with an expensive quarterback. And I think that puts you in a whole nother category if you're able to win when you're the highest paid guy on your roster. And therefore that of course affects the talent that a team is able to surround you with, and you're still able to go out and win. That's what separates, you know, the all time greats. And I already think Patrick Mahomes is an all time great, even if he loses this game. But I'm just talking about what the numbers show on his resume at the end of the day. I think this would start to put him on a track to where you're thinking this guy could win the second most ever Super Bowls. I think it's just the resume stuff that it probably is most at stake, because Patrick Mahomes wins or loses this game on Sunday, I'm still going to think he's the best player in the world.
Yeah, I will too. But I think for the, like you said, legacy of it, to be 2-1 at age 27, Tom Brady was 3-0 at 27. He was only 5 years in, but his sixth year he wouldn't win it either. It does, like I have bristled this past week since Tom Brady announced his retirement, and all the on and on about how, boy, no one's ever going to catch Tom Brady. Unlikely. I don't know that you have to catch him in every statistical category and win more championships to be considered better than him. But it amazes me just how when Patrick Mahomes hit in 2018, everyone was falling all over themselves to call him not just the best now, not just a great start, but even to say he's the best quarterback of all time. If he wins, he will have gone to 3 Super Bowls in 5 years as a starter, 5 conference championship games, and 1-2 Super Bowls. That'll put him definitely on pace, because Brady fell off the pace. You know, he picked it up with a great finish, but the middle of his career, he was 0-2 for like, what, 10 years?
Wins.
There's plenty of time for Mahomes to get in front of Brady. Even if he doesn't finish as strong or have the longevity that he did, he could get to 6 or 7 and still be there. And how it's like, well, we can only focus on one thing. and it's time to slobber on Brady, so we'll slobber on Brady. Till Mahomes wins, and then watch the week of how, again, the conversation will be, he's the greatest of all time.
Yeah, I mean, the conversation just a week ago at this time was whether or not Joe Burrow was better than Patrick Mahomes. Yes. I don't know why in the NFL that the only criteria for the best ever is championships for the quarterback. It doesn't work like that in any other sport. I know it's the most important things in other sports, but for whatever reason, in the team sport of football, it's how many championships do you have as a quarterback, and therefore that's how good you are as a player. I always thought, the prime of their careers when Manning and Brady were going against each other, I always thought I'd rather have Peyton Manning on my team. I don't know that I'd feel differently because of the way the Super Bowls turned out. I know those guys would trade careers, that Peyton Manning would trade that career because of the way the Super Bowl stuff turned out. But I don't know that – what I'm saying is I don't think that Patrick Mahomes has to get 7 Super Bowls for us to say – he eclipsed Tom Brady's career, because all the other statistics suggest that he is going to eclipse Tom Brady's career. And I think when you just watch the two guys play, I think Patrick Mahomes is a better quarterback in the prime of his career. Now, you can't win one and try and have the argument that you had a better career than Tom right. Brady. But let's say this 2-1 at 27, I think we could it wouldn't be outrageous for us to predict he's going to win 4 or 5, right?
Right.
If he gets to 5, do we think he has a worse career than Tom Brady?
I think he needs a minimum of 3 to be in the discussion. I think to really be able to stand on some ground and really fire, 5 would be a great point to be at, because that'd be the second most.
Yeah.
Right. Like, you know, Bill Russell has 11. Ain't anybody taking Russell over Jordan, who has 6.
Right.
So
right.
To your point, absolutely. And it's a point I've been making for a while that, you know, some people, I think people kind of felt like when he lost to the Bucks and then they didn't make it last year and then, you know, Brady got another one. It's like, and he's 0-2 against Brady in the playoffs. Like, oh, well, he can never be the best of all time, but hopefully he'll win us 1 or 2 more championships. Like, no, he can still be the best of all time. Like, it can happen. I mean, Jake Plummer's 3-0 against Tom Brady, right? Like, that's not... You know, Jake Plummer is not the hammer, right? Like it happens. The wins and losses go next to a quarterback, you know, true. No other position do they do that. I get it. They're the most important part of the equation, but they're not the only part of the equation. But I will say this, the rest of the AFC has flopped in stopping Mahomes from getting to this game again while being expensive. And the rest of the nation is now starting to write about how good the front office did in putting the talent around him. With his cost in this rookie class is starting to get heralded, and I'm starting to see, you know, Sports Illustrated did a thing on it. And, you know, I think that's good to see that, you know, there is a lot of other things that are being done around Patrick Mahomes to make him successful. He's the most important piece. Andy Reid's 2nd. Maybe Brett Beach is 3rd. And then, you know, take your pick on any one guy here or there. But, the legacy that is being written is quite impressive, to say the least. And, you know, Andy Reid's legacy. I mean, this is a big one for Andy Reid, too, because it would take him to 2-2 in the Super Bowl, 2-1 with Mahomes. You know, I think this takes him to where, like, if you ask me who's considered the greatest offensive coach in football history, I'd say it's Bill Walsh. Lombardi was an offensive guy, but he's not credited with the sweep and he's more just a coach than he is offensive mind. I think this might elevate Andy Reid to the top of the food chain amongst the offensive coaches that are out there, and maybe even above Bill Walsh, who won 3. Certainly, if Andy hangs around and wins 2 or 3 more, no doubt he grabs the offensive moniker and has a great claim to even though Bill Belichick would still have more, to say, well, I'm better. Look at what I did when I didn't have my Hall of Fame quarterback, which I pointed out, Belichick's done nothing. Andy Reid was very accomplished with other quarterbacks not named Patrick Mahomes. So, this would be a big one for him, too.
Yeah, it will be. But Seren, to touch on something you said, and I know we're probably short on time here, but to touch on something you said with the Brady Mahomes thing, when you go back and look at the times that Tom Brady beat Patrick Mahomes in the playoffs twice, was our conversation after those games about them losing Tom Brady? There were other facets to that game, I think, were the reasons they lost to Tom Brady. The Chiefs defense could not stop anybody in 18. The Bucks had we talked all about the Bucks defensive game plan. Chiefs dropped passes, Chiefs offensive line after the other Super Bowl. Tom Brady was not the topic of conversation with us for the reasons they lost those games.
Yeah, no doubt, no doubt. You're the man, Sam. Enjoy Phoenix. We'll be reading all the great work. Can't wait to talk to you, win or lose, hopefully win, on Monday after the big game. Have fun in Phoenix, and we'll talk to you soon, bud.
Sounds great, Stran. Appreciate it.
All right, that is Sam McDowell as we broadcast live here at the J. Rieger Distillery. Great, great spot. Come on out. You know, they're going to be having a big watch party for the game coming up on Sunday. You can stock up on all your Red Kingdom vodka for the big game, the official vodka of the Kansas City Chiefs. And J. Rieger & Co. will be featuring that as they host the Chiefs watch party on Sunday. There'll be food and drink specials. The Rumble and Casey Wolf are going to be on site to get the party going. There'll be J. Rieger & Co. merch products as well, going to be raffled off during each quarter. Begins at $4, $15 cover. Seats aren't guaranteed, so get here early to make sure you get the best seat. And you, with that $15, get a welcome cocktail token. Good for any J. Rieger & Co. cocktail. You can also come out and enjoy happy hour, as well as this week they're going to be raffling off J. Rieger merch and Chiefs gear during the happy hours on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. That's from 3 to 6. Happy hour menu at J. Rieger offers amazing food. It is incredible food and great drink specials. The best cocktail deals in town are right here at the J. Rieger & Co. Distillery. You can come on out and see it. We're broadcasting live here today at J. Rieger.
All right, who was the first team to score a two-point conversion in the Super Bowl? Brought to you by Jazz, a Louisiana kitchen.